Are you happy? And would you tell me if not? We were so happy, but I think you forgot. But if you're happy, I'll be happy for you. 'Cause if you're happy, maybe I should be too. Maybe I should be.
Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that that's one of the first songs that you wrote, right, Claire?
It is. It was, yeah, the first song I wrote to completion, and the first song I was ever happy with. Yeah.
What was that writing process like?
It was one of the most interesting writing processes. For me, in the sense that it was the easiest. And I think there's a lot of, you know, debate and conversation around where does inspiration come from, and how do the words get from the brain to the paper. And with Happy, it was really, I had a thought, or I had an idea, as I was sitting in my very messy bedroom, childhood bedroom, after my first semester of college, and this idea or this lyric came to me, and I sat down on my bed and I started writing, and I did not get up from that bed for like 6 hours until that song was done. And the song really hasn't changed much from that first time I sat down and wrote it, but it was very cathartic for me to write. I think a lot of people, you know, share the experience of the first semester in college can be a very turbulent, emotional one, and there's a lot of growth that happens, but also a lot of growing apart that happens from both your home and yourself that you used to know or used to be, and the friends that you used to have. And so I was going through a lot of change and a lot of loss, and I think it all kind of culminated into the song that is now Happy. Mm. And yeah, so that one's very special for me.
Yeah, that's a really great song. Claire showed me a demo of it, I think the winter of 2018. Mm. And I remember I listened to it on repeat all winter break. And before then, it's like, it was kind of Leo Sun and the Q-Tip Bandits. It was like my project. And I was like, there's no way people are going to go on living without hearing Claire's songs. Like, this has to happen. It is a special song.
I was very honored when Leo said that we could play it live. And yeah, that was the kind of the turning point of where the band became less of Leo's project with musicians, and more of our project and our start of being a band.
Mm.
And being a team. And yeah, what a wild 6 years it's been.
Yeah, totally.
And so I'd imagine, you know, that song and some of your songs, Leo, you both brought with you to the group before its genesis.
Mm-hmm.
What's the co-writing process like for you two when you're writing together?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you kind of still bring your own ideas to the table? And then
it's kind of just beginning the co-writing process.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I think everything that we have released, everything that is out up until now, has been very much either I bring in a song and it's complete to the point of the lyrics and the structure of the song are finished, and then the band puts, you know, the life into it, the like finishing touches. And same with Leo. Leo would bring in songs that he's written.
I love the cake analogy. Mm. Like, I feel like we're just moving where we introduce people into the process of making the cake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before, Clara and I would present the layered cake and we'd be like, okay, let's ice the outside and like figure out how we want to decorate it. And now it's like, we're at the batter making process, and now we're trying to decide if we're going to put what we're going to put in the batter and like what the foundation of the song is going to be, more and more as a collaborative process. And it's fun entering into that space. And one of the first songs we collaborated on is our song July, which will be off this next record, and I'm really excited for it. You know, I think we butt heads about lyrical ideas, and we both really like our own ideas, and I think that's where that sort of the spark of two hard heads colliding is sometimes where the magic is, and we'll find out how the two heads fit together more and more as we do it, and it's been a fun process.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, thankfully, I can't speak for you, but Leo is one of my favorite songwriters, and I think that helps.
You stole the words right out of my mouth, Claire. You're one of my favorite writers.
So I think it helps that we are some of each other's favorite writers, and just to be grateful to be able to be collaborating. I think really great things happen when we do get past the butting of heads and songs emerge from it. And it's been a really fun process also in writing this next record that, you know, will be coming out, and working with our producer as well, and kind of having his ear on the writing process before we get into the studio to record, has also made for some really cool changes in the songs and in the writing. It's nice to have everyone a little more involved in the process from the ground up.
When you're looking for inspiration, or when you're just writing, is there anywhere that you like to go physically or mentally to get in the zone?
Good question. Good question, Max.
I think one of the most inspirational things for me is to just go out in public without really having a goal, or even if you're having a goal, I really try and not have headphones in when I'm out in public, because I think that's where some of my favorite inspiration comes from, is just like hearing the little snips of conversation of someone passing you by, or being on the T or on the train and just like observing what's going around. And I really like to, you know, kind of just look at people and kind of try to imagine, where are they going? Where are they coming from? What is their story? Same thing with airports. I think airports are beautiful places for inspiration. I feel like for as much as I also get inspiration from listening to other artists and listening to their music, I do that in my own private space. And then when I'm out in public, I try to be as plugged in to just what's going on in the world as I can be, in order to gather inspiration from just everyday mundane things, like a messy room for happy, or
yeah, that's a fantastic answer. I feel like we recently had that conversation with a friend about how we don't really listen to music when we're in public or in spaces where there's a lot of people. And for me, I feel like there's a lot of inspiration that comes from that, of like, I feel like I go through phases of writing. And what is in between those phases of writing are phases where I'm like, I just need to live right now. I just need to be fully plugged into life and feel everything and notice what's going on and really be plugged into the flow. That way, when I sit down in my own space and the lights dim and there's this chair that I really love to sit in, and maybe one of the guitars is calling me over another, it's like there's something there that can flow through. And for me, I always have this cry test, is what I like to call it. And it's like, if I'm sitting with my guitar and I can bring myself to tears by something, it means maybe it's worth sharing with somebody else. And if it doesn't pass that test, I rarely share it with other people. And part of that is like having my own space. I like being alone. I like it being kind of dark. I like being able to go inside myself and just mine myself for what could be in there. And yeah, it's I hold that space very sacred. And I've asked myself that question this morning, actually, when I sat down in this chair and I was like, if I were to move now, would I miss this chair? And would I find different inspiration in a different chair looking out a different window? And I don't know what the answer is. I think I would absolutely miss the chair. But it's also exciting to think about what inspiration a new space would bring.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I also think more than like a physical space, at least speaking for myself, I feel like a lot of my songs just come from people and friends. And I feel like each song that I write, I kind of write with a specific person in mind. And sometimes that person is myself, but usually it, you know, is some comment or something about a relationship with someone that sparks an idea for a song. And back to the presence thing of just like being there for people is, you know, is a mutually beneficial thing.
Totally. And on just this topic still, because I think it's really easy for both of us and any creative person to talk about inspiration like it's this mystical thing that's so wispy and it cannot be grabbed unless you are like anointed, right? Like, it's so easy to talk about it in a romantic way. But sometimes it's just like, I just speak gibberish and until it makes sense. Sometimes it's just like, I can't be the editor and the writer at the same time, and allowing myself to say some really silly, dumb things that like I would never repeat on a stage to people, but it's a part of the process of being like, these are just words, just like we sit down and speak to each other all the time. I'm just sitting down with my instrument and trying to approach it in that way of like, it is beautiful and magical to create. But trying to demystify, like, the where do the words come from? Well, where did you find the words to ask me that question? And it's like, it's this ongoing, like, I love how magic it is, but I also love how simple it is sometimes. And remembering that's important.
Yeah. So outside of yourselves and the world around you, I guess, are there any specific musical influences that you would say have contributed to your songwriting style or your musical style?
I think it's always changing, of course. I think one of the first bands and musical inspirations that both Leo and I shared was like a love for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and really just both loving their music, but even more so loving their attitude and their energy on stage, and just the fact that they are still a band making music together like 40 years after they started, like that in itself is so crazy and wonderful and such an inspiration.
A good friend of ours from the band Ripe, Samson, he always likes to remind us, nothing kills more bands than resentment. And to look at a band like the Red Hot Chili Peppers and be like, 40 years of communication amongst the members, enough. I'm sure there's stuff we don't know about. I'm sure everybody's got their thing and the things that kind of like rub us the wrong way or grind our gears or whatever the saying is. But just to know that they've kept it together and they're still creating is remarkable and inspiring.
Yeah. Musically, what do you think?
Musically or otherwise, yeah?
Up to you. I mean, the next question was going to be, are there any other, like, sources of media that you take inspiration from?
Gotcha. I like reading. Mm-hmm. And I notice it when I'm reading, like, a mental health help book or something like that. Like, those words kind of sneak into the writing, or like I've been reading through Lord of the Rings for the first time and it's been very exciting, but then there's like imagery of thunder and lightning and dark clouds start to pop up in the writing, and it always kind of comes through my mouthpiece, and I'm never writing stories about elves and hobbits traversing Middle Earth, but these I know, sometimes there, we have a list of band names where we could start a side project and just make it real themed, but it seeps its way in. And mm-hmm. like anything, television, you know, like just going for a walk, like it's everywhere. And it comes back to the presence thing that Claire was talking about, of just being in a space where we're willing to notice that it's happening. And it's easier when I'm consuming other media, because it's like I'm actively consuming these words, or I'm actively consuming these images, and that's going to play a part into how it goes through my being processes, and then the energy is released back out mm-hmm. in a different way.
Yeah, I think reading is a good one. It's something that I'm trying to get more back into, because I think when I was reading, I was also just hit by inspiration a lot more frequently. Nowadays, I am a lot more into like visual art, and I get inspiration from visual art at times as well. And yeah, being out in nature, I think, is also a very inspirational thing. And a lot of good ideas come from just being surrounded by some trees.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So outside of music, what do you guys like to do for fun? It sounds like hikes and reading and that kind of thing. And do you have any other creative outlets?
Yeah. I'll say mine first, because I think Claire's is more impressive. And she can, like, go on and plug her thing and, like, really lean into it. But I really like to crochet, so I like to make little stuffed animals.
He's very
animals.
Good at it, also.
Thank you.
Sorry,
Kevin. Little stuffed animals. I've been making, like, Pokemon lately, and along those lines, like, as a hobby, I really like retro video games. So, like, collecting Nintendo games has been the thing lately, along with the crocheting.
Like I said, I'm very into visual art, and it's always been like the only other passion that has kind of rivaled music throughout my life, but has been put on the back burner for the majority of like college and when we started playing as a band, and music took priority. But in recent years, I've kind of found myself going back to those visual art roots, and I've been just like creating and creating prints and stickers and things, and like running a little art shop for bazaars and things when I'm not gigging and playing music, which has also been such a wonderful and fulfilling like way to tap into like the artistic community in Boston. So I've been really enjoying doing that, as well as taking care of my plants. Big plant lady.
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to like help Claire out with some of these like art bazaars. Mm. And oh my God, it's like the feeling of a music festival. It's like all these people presenting the thing that they've created so passionately, and they're just like on full display. And the energy in those rooms or those markets is just so cool and so like inspiring.
Yeah. Very, very cool, very fun to be mm-hmm. a part of.
And if anyone listening would like to see some of your art, is there anywhere where people can find it?
Oh yeah, it's at Slugs N Kisses Art on Instagram, and I've got an Etsy shop by the same name as well. And yeah, I feel lucky also to be doing a lot of the artwork for the band in the past, and like, you know, did our merch designs, or a lot of them at least, and get to be a part of working on the album art. And yeah, so it's a cool way to intersect those two passions.
Awesome. And yeah. So you mentioned plants. I know it's like picking your favorite child, but do you have a favorite plant?
A lot of my plants have come a long way with me. Like, they've moved with me to different places, and like, it's always, you know, not all of them make it, and so when one of them makes it, it is very special. And I've had this one particular pothos plant that was a clipping from like my sophomore year of high school environmental club, and it is a little clipping named Bob, who is now sprouted into like this very big pothos plant that I've been
full
able
blown
to like
Robert plant.
Yep.
So good.
But yeah, I think there's even just something so symbolic about plants and like pot those plants, particularly because you can just like snip off a clipping, give it to your friends, kind of pass on like this. I don't know. There's just something so poetic to me about plants and plant clippings in that way. And so, yeah, I have to go with Bob the Pothos.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And Leo, you, I almost called you Bob.
Bob the plant.
Yes.
And you mentioned video games. Do you have any favorite retro video games?
Oh, man. It's not a unique answer, but I love the first and second generation of Pokemon. I think they are some of the best RPG games around. Because of the format, and like, you know, like there's Ocarina of Time, but the 3D setting really lends well to the RPG vibe. But to create something so immersive that's pixel art, and all of these like images of Pokemon that we know them as now, were not even a part of the overworld. Like, you had to interact, you had to like work with this like very basic world that was built. And there was so much like wonder to be found in just walking through a little patch of grass. And how it was structured of like, one really needs to explore and like talk to the people in this world. And it was such an open world in like the truest meaning, where the beginning of the game was like a path. And after a certain point, you could go wherever you want. Mm-hmm. And the world of Pokemon was yours to explore. And I've loved it ever since. And going back and just getting my Game Boy and just playing those games is a nice way for me to get grounded. And those are the games I bring on tour. And it's, yeah.
And potentially the most divisive question of the night, who's your starter?
Ooh, wow. Generation one, I'm a Charmander boy. I know it's not great for the first gym because it's a rock gym, but I'm a fire type by nature, just as a being myself, and I gotta go with Charmander.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a solid answer, you know?
Hell, you can't go wrong with Gen 1. Yeah. All of them are good answers.
Oh, that is true. That is true. Maybe not the most divisive question of the night. I mean, hopefully, honestly, there's nothing in here that should really be too much.
Bro,
of a...
I really loved Bermuda Search Party until Leo said he liked Charmander. Because, like, how are you gonna go into the first gym like that?
Well, I mean, but if you can overcome that, then
exactly.
You know, you're in the clear.
Exactly. Yeah.
Here's a random one. Do you guys have any good jokes?
Oh my god, okay, yes, I just saw this one on Instagram and it's been my favorite forever.
Take it away.
Alright, Max, mm-hmm. What's a pirate's favorite letter?
What is a pirate's favorite letter, Leo?
You would think it's R, but the C be me first love.
Oh.
That's so bad, but I love it. So
the version that I like to tell on that punchline is that a pirate's favorite letter is actually the letter P. Because it's like an R, but it's missing a leg.
Got you right back.
I know. It's the next yeah, one. Yeah. If they've heard it, I'll hit them with that one.
That's great.
Well, and I will say, I was listening to a very early interview with you two a couple of days ago, and you had me like almost fall on the ground laughing. You were talking about potential other names.
I'm so curious which interview this was.
I know, it's the Foreskins one.
Well, the three skins.
The three skins, but one of us got cut. That's right. Oh my god.
And so after I heard that, I was like, I have to ask if they have any good jokes. you had me dying.
Wow. Got more band names than jokes.
That's right.
I mean, those are two important like folders that you have in your notes.
You're
app.
Right.
You got band names, you got jokes,
you're
you
right.
got yeah, and probably lyrics for you guys and
lots
yeah,
of
other
lyrics.
Important things.
Yep.
Yeah. How about we play another song of yours and then maybe do a lightning round?
Sounds
yeah,
great.
Let's do it.
Cool. I've got a couple of songs. I'm going to give you guys the choice. Mm. I've got your big first recording, Willow. And then I've also got two songs off of your recent album, which are Lifeline and Dandelion. And we can get to all of them at some point, but what would you like next?
Let's play Dandelion.
I was thinking the same.
Yeah.
I feel like that one doesn't get enough love.
That's right.
I'd love to give it some love.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely. Here we go.
With a pocket full of
So right before the end of that song, Leo, you said that you got that guitar tone by accident. How'd you do that?
Me and Dakota were in the basement, which was our like our HQ for a little while, and we were working on the demos for these songs, and we had just been messing with guitar pedals all day. And at that point, I just started noodling, and I'd never went through this specific guitar pedal with as much like gain. And I started playing it, and when I hit that like slide up and hit that triad, it just started crumbling in this way. And I was like, it has to be in the song. There's no way we're not going to record this. And it's not something that I had in the arsenal up until that point. And yeah, we just had our big old like bucket headphones on that are meant for drummers, and we had the amp cranked up all day just messing with sounds, and that's what came out of it.
It's a very cool song.
Thank you.
Do you want to talk about some of the inspiration behind the lyrics?
So I have been in recovery from drugs and alcohol for 8 going on 9 years now. And the song is equal parts, I think, reflecting what Claire was talking about earlier. Like, I like to take a person in mind, or an energy of a person in mind. And for me, it was equal parts. Like, I had heard that a childhood friend had overdosed around the time. And also, I had visited a friend in Brooklyn that I hadn't seen in, I think it must have been 8 years at the time. And this idea of like, I remember you as a kid. I don't remember you as the grown adult that you are now. And this idea of like, every person that is a grown adult, that is an old man or woman or person that's out there, is just this kid that's going about in the world now. And just kind of taking imagery from my childhood and sneaking drugs around school and that kind of behavior and getting suspended from school and that feeling of like when the administration is against you but you find love in unlikely friendships, and it's a special song.
Yeah, I'm really sorry for your loss.
It's all right. Yeah, I appreciate that.
It that was one of the first songs that I pulled out of your discography for this interview, because it really, I think, is a nice encapsulation of your sound. It's a very, not Q-tip, but Bermuda Search Party sound. And it's also like one of the, I think that's one of the more upbeat songs that I've played of yours tonight, and it might have the saddest lyrics. So you know, it's
yeah.
We do like our juxtaposition.
We do.
Absolutely. And with that, let's get right into the lightning round.
Yeah, sounds good.
Let's do it.
Since you just said juxtaposition, I'll start with, what is your favorite word?
Ooh.
Currently it is froggy.
I like the word ikigai.
Ooh.
Japanese word that means like your calling in life, your purpose of living.
Cool.
It has to do a lot with feeling froggy sometimes.
So much deeper than froggy.
Oh, no, Claire. Froggy has depth beyond our comprehension. We could not even imagine what it's like to truly be a frog. So you really have me beat on that one.
Can you define froggy?
I just learned this recently also. It's like feeling like jumpy, right? Like
It's like, are you feeling froggy? Because it feels like you want to get jumped. Like, you want to start a fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feeling froggy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopping at the... Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hippity hoppity happening. All that.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I have a great joke about a frog, which I will not say on air right now, but I will tell you guys in the break.
Beautiful.
Can't wait.
Dream musical collaboration.
Oh, right now for me, it's Post Malone. I don't know why. But it's in my being.
Sick.
I read that question and I was like, Post Malone. 100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. For me, it's 21 Pilots.
Cool.
They've also been a huge inspiration in the last few years.
And something more attainable right now, our friends Post Sex Nachos. If you're listening, let's do it.
if you guys hearing that? If you could wake up tomorrow with the ability to play any instrument, what instrument would you choose?
3, 2, 1, cello.
Oh. For any reason in particular?
Oh, just gorgeous. So cool. Yeah. There's no other instrument that I think is just right in the human voice range and can bend notes like the human voice, and it's just like, it evokes emotion in that way. And it's just so rich and beautiful.
Yeah,
and
great. Trumpet's a close second, though, yes. For both of us.
Yeah.
Like, oh, just the ability of that our horn players have to pick up their instrument on one hand and go outside and play it anywhere is so cool.
It's incredible. It's incredible. I feel like I'm living out a dream having a horn section in this band because it's like, it's almost like I'm playing it.
Yeah, I guess in a way, the band itself is just an instrument.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The band plays the horns good.
Take all credit away from them.
No. Macklin and Hoyt are tremendous at what they do. I am in awe that they can play their instruments the way that they do.
What's your favorite gig that you've played?
I think for me, it's our most, Boston Calling, which we played this last summer. That one is very special.
I am horrible at lightning rounds because I always like to elaborate. Paradise Rock Club was amazing. I grew up down the street from that venue, and that was like a huge benchmark as just like a performer for me as an artist. And then we played this place called Off-Broadway in St. Louis. And the last time we played that venue, it was to 200 people, and we were opening for our friends Post-Sex Nachos. By the way, we should collaborate. And this was our first time headlining. And for whatever reason, there's always variables. There were 25 people there, and I was so distraught. And then by the time we were in our set, I was just like, these people love it. And we are just having such a great time. And it was this reminder of like, the next time we play here, 5 years later, we play here and we're in the 1,000-cap room like we do at home. It's like, these 25 people are going to have a special place in my heart when we're in St. Louis. And they were there and they loved it. And it was a quality over quantity thing. And just the turnaround of the beginning and the end of the night. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you will always have a special place in their hearts.
True.
First time I saw you guys, I mean, you actually remember the name of the venue, right? It was that basement that we...
I think it's 1803.
1803. And I mean, there couldn't have been more than 30, 40, 50 people there.
Yeah.
Tops.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. I feel like something that I tried... sorry, terrible at lightning rounds.
No,
something
yeah,
that I try to like... remember is like, for a performer, right? You're playing to a crowd of like 20 people. And, you know, there's a tendency to sometimes be like, oh, I wish there were more people in the room. But then to think about like, oh my God, if I were seeing, like, say, 21 Pilots, and I was one of the 20 people in the room seeing them, like, early on, oh my God, I would feel so special. And, like, trying to remember that the audience perspective of a small room is so different than the performer's perspective of a small room is really, I think, important to keep in mind for us.
Yeah, when we played to 60 people at Once Lounge, Hoyt was like, play to 600. When we played to 500 people at the Sinclair, Hoyt was like, play to 5,000. And then when we played Boston Calling to, I don't know, 6,000 people, he's like, play to 60,000 people tonight.
Yeah.
And it's always just like, put on the performance for the people that are there, not the people who aren't, and give it our all. And it's, yeah. And there's these old 21 Pilot videos where it's like the same hype energy and Tyler Joseph is like jumping around and going crazy. And then the camera pans and it's like two people
yeah,
there, but he's giving it.
Oh, it's so great. So inspirational.
Yeah.
And on that note, do you guys have a favorite song to perform?
Oof.
Happy is up there. For me, we don't get to play it all the time because we try and keep our especially shorter sets very high energy, and so Happy doesn't always make it into the set, but when we do get to play it, it's definitely one of my favorites.
Yeah, the one of the new songs, July, is one of our first co-writes, and Claire's singing lead on it, and I really enjoy just playing my guitar sometimes, and it's nice to just kind of vibe and enjoy that musical space with the band and not need to be the one singing. But I also really love just all the new songs. There's so much new excitement with Olivia and Asking for a Friend when we play them live that I just can't wait to like be able to give people something that they can listen to that's a version of what I feel when I play that song.
Yeah. You've already released several covers. How many?
Just one.
Gigs. Oh, just one.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah. What's another song that you would like to cover?
I've been pushing for this one for years. I don't think it'll ever happen, but I would love to cover On Melancholy Hill by the Gorillaz.
Ooh.
That song is just so special to me, and I think that could make a great horn line. I love that song. But
that's a really good answer. Oh, man. I don't know. I really wanted to cover a Red Hot Chili Peppers song, because they've been so meaningful to us. And Zephyr's song is one of those. And again, it feels like our friends Juice did it so well. They threw in a Zeppelin cover in their encore. And I was like, oh, this is the last thing I expected. And if you're gonna do Zeppelin, you gotta do it good. And like, they had the violin playing the guitar solos, and I was like, oh. And I'm like, if we cover the Chili Peppers, we gotta do it good.
Yeah, it's always a tough thing choosing a cover of, like, you want to choose like the niche songs that mean so much to you, but you also want to play the songs that the most amount of people are going to know, because because the show is about them, you know, and not so much about us, and wanting to give them that experience. But
and how can we put our own identity into something that is already known so well?
Right.
Yeah. I think covers are really cool, because you really can't, I mean, your cover of Kids is pretty neat. I like it a lot. Yeah.
Thank you.
And it you know, it catches your ear. I think the craziest cover that I saw live, though, was I saw OK Go play Black Dog by Led Zeppelin.
Wow.
Whoa, I never would have imagined right? that they would play that song.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, what? Yeah. And the next question, what's your favorite color?
Yellow.
Purple.
Nice.
Look at us, wait, look at our clothes.
Oh, whoa. How about that?
Yeah, purple sweater on me. Claire's got this striped yellow. For those at home,
it's kind of giving like Charlie Brown a little bit, in a great way.
Yeah, no,
the scarf really helps too. It's very Charlie Brown Christmas vibes.
Very cozy.
My fashion idol.
Someone tell me why he's bald.
He's got three hairs.
Okay, fair. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with being bald.
Of course, nothing wrong with it. I just want to know the backstory, because he is a child.
Caillou too.
Caillou, 4 years old. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm just curious of the story of how they got to be the way they are.
Okay, it's probably lower maintenance. No, those are some active kids.
They really thought this through.
Like, oh, I can't be bothered animating this kid's or washing this kid's hair all day. What was the first concert you went to?
Avril Lavigne and the Jonas Brothers in Luxembourg.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Were you living in Luxembourg?
No.
Just there on like vacation and
I think so. I think actually, so my family was living in Germany when I was growing up, and I really wanted to see that show, and so we drove all the way to Luxembourg to see that performance.
Nice.
Yep.
Mine was Beyonce at TD Garden on the Irreplaceable tour.
Wow. Awesome. Are you involved with any other projects?
Yeah, so both of us do random gigs here and there, but we also play with a group local to Boston called Super Pink, which is led by our friend Luke Bergamini.
Who is the funkiest man alive.
Funkiest man alive.
And who we also met at that same 1803 show where you saw us at the first time. Saw us the first time.
Yeah.
But he is a phenomenal musician. If you haven't heard of him, please check out Super Pink and his personal page, which is the funkiest
world's funkiest man.
And he is,
yeah, it's like space disco music is how he describes it, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Very, very stoked that we get to, aside from like playing in the Bermuda Search Party, like like, you know, getting to lead the stage and like befriend people and sing and write the songs, like, it's just so much fun also to just like play our instruments mm-hmm. and like be in the background and like just have fun and playing also, some funky tunes.
Yeah, and just supporting this guy that to us is like, I've like really looked up to his playing, and for him to have asked me to be a part of this project, it's like, I'm happy to help him elevate, and it's a really cool role to play when we are not leading our own thing.
Yeah.
And space disco does sound pretty out of this world.
It's phenomenal.
And I've been meaning to ask you guys, I don't know if I wrote it down, but how would you define Bermuda Search Party's genre?
It's something we've been trying to put our finger on for a while. In its most basic, I would say we are indie pop, energetic indie pop with a brass section.
Yeah. I would like to say that it is uplifting. It is, especially the new record, again, it's just unapologetically upbeat. And I don't know if I can just put like a pithy soundbite, but it's more like, we are trying to bring joy to our listeners. We want people who connect with our music to feel not alone and to feel that sense of joy when they hear our music. And yeah. I hope that comes through.
I think one of the things that we had talked about initially for a concept for this next project was this idea of first we dance, then we cry, which is kind of also what we're trying to embody of like, your first listen through, your body's grooving, you're moving, you know, you're having a good time. But if you go through and listen again to the lyrics, like there might be something deeper, more emotional in there for you to connect with something deeper down. Yeah,
for sure. Mm-hmm. And what's the best advice that you've ever been given?
You want to go first?
Yeah, sure, I'll take it.
Okay.
The best advice that I've ever been given is find the people that you want to learn from, find the people that you want to be around, introduce yourself, and just stand around awkwardly. And that's all you need to do to start meeting the people who are going to help you in what you want to accomplish. And along those lines, a nice little sidecar to the advice was another friend told me, everybody is socially anxious. We are all just at varying degrees of pretending like we're not. So go say hi to the person you want to say hi to.
That's a good one. Yeah, I feel like mine comes from a bass player and music mentor that I really admire, Victor Wooten. And he, in I think some sort of speech that I found in early high school, was talking about a quote from his mom where she asked him what the world needed. And the answer kind of being that the world doesn't need more good lawyers, more good doctors, more good musicians, more good artists. Like, the world has plenty of those, but what the world consistently needs is more good people. So with whatever career path you decide to do, just always remember that the world needs more good people. So try and be that.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Can't be a good musician without being a good person. I wish it were true.
Yeah, Claire and I both made a face at that one.
Oh, I mean, know. Yeah. It's my philosophy, but it is not everybody's philosophy.
No. But I think that if you want to have a lasting legacy and a lasting impact, being a good person really helps.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's hear another song of yours, and then when we get back, we can wrap things up.
Sounds great.
I'll give you guys the choice again. Willow or Lifeline? Or if there's another one that you would really like to hear, the world is at your fingertips.
Wow. Let's do Willow.
Sure.
Let's bring it back.
Yeah.
A classic.
A classic.
That was just the first recording from Bermuda Search Party. That was a song called Willow. And now, would you guys like to take it away?
This is
Claire
and Leo from Bermuda Search Party.
And you're listening to
91.5 FM
WMFO
Medford Tufts Freeform Radio WMFO.
Oh, yeah.
WMFO.
Nailed it again.
Yeah, we crushed that, Claire.
Hey, well, by next time you guys are on here, you'll have it down to a science.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah.
We'll rehearse it before we come in next time.
Then it wouldn't be freeform radio.
That's true. That's a great point, Andrew. And I'm Mellow Max for anyone tuning in. This has been highly recommended, full of all of the music and acts that I recommend highly. Thank you guys both for coming in. And let's see, I do have a couple more questions that we can touch on, but first, social media. Where can people find you?
Yeah, we are on everywhere that you are, most likely at Bermuda Search Party. And that includes Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the streaming platforms. And yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Am I missing anything?
No.
Cool.
Bermuda Search Party.
Yeah.
You can find us anywhere there's music on the internet.
Perfect. And if you liked this interview, or if you only got a piece of it and you want to hear the rest, it'll be up on Spotify by the end of the week. You can find it by looking up Highly Recommended Mellow Max, and it should come up. I think I need to figure out what the right searching is to get to it. Awesome. And coming up, you guys have an album. You have a single coming out in April, and then an album coming out at some point after April.
Yes.
You have a couple.
It's true.
I mean, was there a more specific date than that? Or if not, that's
singles coming out in spring.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Perfect. Something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much what I've got. The next show on the air is On the Town with Mikey D, which is all local music. Do you guys want to lead into that by talking about your pros and cons for the Boston music scene?
Oh, interesting.
I think it came up a little bit right now, or a little earlier, is that a lot of venues have shut down during the pandemic. And I think the Boston scene is missing a lot of mid-sized rooms, and places like Great Scott, Thunder Road, just these like stepping stone venues for local bands to really start building ticket history and a following and reaching more people. That has been tough to navigate. But I do love how small the Boston scene is. It's not huge, and it's easy to know everyone, and it really feels like the difference of being a Boston artist and a New York artist are like, we know all our favorite bands in the genre that we play, and mm-hmm. we're friends, and when we leave Boston, if we leave Boston, we will still be a Boston band.
Absolutely.
And there's that sense of community here that I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been cool. I'm not a Boston native, but Leo is, and to kind of have met him 6 years ago and be introduced to the Boston music scene through the open mic scene and through going to smaller scale shows and just like people's house parties and house concerts that they were putting on, and to kind of have grown with that scene and still be seeing some of the same people making music and doing the things, it's a cool feeling to see. And I walked into an open mic at the Lizard Lounge recently, which they just reopened their open mics, and just seeing some friends from there, I really had that same feeling of like, oh wow, like it's small, which to some people is is a con, but also it can be a very big pro of like, you walk into a room and you're automatically greeted by faces that you know and a very supportive community, and there's no like this feeling of I need to prove myself, you know, and it's more of like everyone's mm-hmm. welcoming and wants to hear your music and what you have to offer.
Yeah. Coral Moons comes to mind. Of like, I was friends with Justin and Carly from a local band called Coral Moons, and I've been friends with them from the open mic scene for 7 to 8 years, and they were Hoping Things for a while. They were like three different band names for a while, and now it's like they're playing Boston Calling, they're playing Brighton Music Hall, they're doing the thing, and it's nice to grow up with a community.